everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Jewish Studies. I'm Jason Shulman. We've got a great show for you today. My guest is Adam Furziger, who teaches at Bar-Ilan University. Here to talk about his new book, Beyond Sectarianism, The Realignment of American Orthodox Judaism, published in 2015 by Wayne State University Press. Adam, welcome to New Books in Jewish Studies.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So, Adam, I want to start, as the book does, with Charles Liebman, a social scientist who in 1965 sort of changed the way we think about Orthodox Judaism in America. What was the view of Orthodoxy before Liebman, and what did Liebman have to say, and is his view still dominant today?
That's a great question, Jason. So Liebman was a fascinating individual. He grew up in the Midwest, then taught at Yeshiva University before he eventually made Aliyah, immigrated to Israel, and was an Israel Prize winner himself. And died, unfortunately, from a heart attack at the age of 70. Very wonderful man, very thoughtful, critical, and a path-breaking social scientist. And I had the privilege of studying with him and from his many books. Anyway, so Liebman, in the 1960s, took a look at what people were saying about Orthodox Judaism. And he saw that most academics who looked at the Orthodox community assumed that it was just a dwindling remnant of the immigrant generations, that these were people who were somehow were holding on to something from the shtetl, from the their European origins. And in America, it just couldn't hold water, couldn't last. So it was just a question of time before they would disappear. The future, certainly the religious future of American Jews, was at that time most likely looked at through the conservative movement and possibly in the Reform movement, the Reconstructionist movements, but certainly not the Orthodox. And Liebman knew that literature, but then he started doing studies and seeing what was going on and statistics and interviews and literature and looking at institutions, synagogues and schools, camps, etc. And he reached really the opposite conclusion. He reached the conclusion that the Orthodox population in America in the 1960s was growing stronger, was quite vibrant, and that it had a very strong future ahead for it. And there's no question that when we look at the Pew Report, for example, for 2013, that he was correct. So that was his basis. If you want to talk more, I can explain a little bit about the perception that he went on and developed in terms of the different groups within Orthodoxy. But that's the starting point.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. One of his sort of theoretical arguments involves the church-sect dichotomy. Maybe you can tell us about that and how it applies to the Orthodox.
For sure. So just one important point, which is that Liebman did recognize that there were Jews who fit into the categories that some of his peers or some of his own mentors, people like Professor Marshall Sklar from Brandeis University and others had pointed to when they talked about this dying remnant. He referred to them as folk Orthodox, people who weren't particularly intellectual, weren't particularly educated, hadn't really developed any sort of conscious, positive Orthodox approach to living an Orthodox life in America. But we're just continuing out of rote, so to speak, to follow the ways of their immigrant parents. And he agreed that those people probably wouldn't sustain the lifestyle that they were living. Certainly their children wouldn't. Jeffrey Gurak, who's a very important scholar who's at Yeshiva University now, has referred an article to these people as the non-observant Orthodox. And he argued that until the early 1960s, most Orthodox synagogues in the United States were populated primarily by Jews who were non-observant. We can get back to that subject later on in the discussion, because I think it is an important one for thinking about contemporary issues. Regarding Liebman and his dichotomy, so he didn't make up this dichotomy. Max Weber, one of the founding fathers of modern sociology, when he was looking at Christianity and the evolution of Christianity, he talked about two formulations or typologies for how religious groups develop. He talked about a sect and a church. And he said generally religious groups start as sects. They split off socially from the a dominant mainstream environment. They generally take a select group of people who agree on theology, on lifestyle, on culture, what we refer to today as a type of egalitarian society, not egalitarian in the way that we talk about feminism, egalitarian in the sense that everybody is on the same level. Everybody is performing religion, observing, etc., on the same level. If you want to look at examples from the ancient Near East, so if you look at, let's say, the Dead Sea sect or the sect in Qumran in the Judean desert, they would be a classic sect. In any case, so one group is a sect. Another group is usually is a group that develops later at a later point in a religious history is what's called what Weber referred to as a church. And a church is a much more a bigger structure. It's a structure that has a bureaucracy. It has leadership. It has clear clear people who are at the top. It's a hierarchical type of structure. And what Lieben said is that as religions develop, eventually you can't have this egalitarian type of framework, but rather you're going to have leadership. You're going to have people who are doing the ideals, who are observing on the highest level, who are often the priesthood or the rabbis. But that organized religions, when they become mass religions, become more inclusive. And certainly that was the way things went with the various Christian denominations, where they have to accept a broader group of population, and therefore have a hierarchy of who's performing the religion on the highest level, and those people who are on not doing it in an ideal way, but nonetheless have a space. So what Lieben did, Jason, is that he took this typology and he applied it to American Orthodoxy in the 1960s. And he said that there were two groups, basically, that you could be distinguished according to this typology. One group, which he referred to as the sectarian Orthodox, he was referring to what we call today Haredi Orthodoxy, namely people who sometimes referred to as ultra-Orthodox, yeshivish, Hasidish people who are in that category are what he referred to as sectarian, as opposed to the Church Orthodox, which is colloquially generally referred to as the modern Orthodox. And Lieben said that if you use these distinctions, we can really learn a lot about the two groups, not the folk Orthodox, but rather the engaged groups. Both these groups are engaged. Both these groups are educated. Both these groups are performing Judaism in an active way. Nonetheless, they have very different world views. Now, following Weber, Lieben said is that the most basic distinction between a sectarian group and a church-like structure is how they relate to people who are different than the ideal. Sectarians close themselves off. They create all sorts of boundaries to protect themselves, to prevent infiltration by people who are different than them. They see the outside world as scary. They see themselves, for example, if you talk about the Dead Sea sect, as the people of the light as opposed to the people of darkness. That he perceived the Haredim in America or the sectarian Orthodox in America as really developing along those lines, living geographically in enclaves, cutting themselves off intellectually, culturally, and socially as much as possible from American society, and not only general American non-Jewish society, but broader Jewish society. They saw the Jews would come. We'll stop there for a second. On the other side, the modern Orthodox or the Church Orthodox being people who are more inclusive, people who developed synagogues and schools and camps and all sorts of frameworks, organizations which allowed for greater diversity. They had a certain standard. They certainly expected their rabbis to meet that standard. They educated kids towards a certain standard, but they recognized that there was room for more diversity. And they also, many of them, were willing to cooperate with those who were clearly non-Orthodox, meaning conservative, reform, etc., for common common good. Now, just one more point before I open up to your follow-up question, which is that in terms of immigrations, there was a difference Liebman pointed to between these two groups. Namely, the Church Orthodox or modern Orthodox had their roots in the great immigrations of millions and millions of Eastern European Jews at the end of the turn of the 20th century, at the end of the 19th century, until about 1924, when there were limitations put on immigration. And these were Jews who came to America because they saw it as the golden Medina, as the golden land. They saw it as a land of economic opportunity. They were running away from persecution. They were intent on making America work. And just like their non-observant or non-Orthodox brethren, they saw integration into America as a positive element, as something that was very good. And they differed in that they thought that they could integrate into America in a way which would not mean compromising their faith and their commitments. And they tried to create institutions, synthetic institutions like Yeshiva University, like the Young Israel Synagogue Movement, like the Day School Movement, that would facilitate this type of synthetic Judaism. The sectarians or the Haredim, for the most part, said Liebman, came around World War II a little bit before or during and after. They were refugees. They were people who didn't want to come to Europe previously, to come to America previously, because they believed that America wasn't the golden Medina. It was the trefa Medina. It was the unkosher country. And therefore, they were convinced they would lose their faith there. They had no choice after when Hitler came into power, when Jews lost their legitimacy to live as citizens in many of the countries of Europe, or their families and communities were destroyed. They made their way to wherever they could get to. They came to America, but they said, America is dangerous, and we have to create guards. We have to build fortresses so that we will be able to sustain ourselves in this very complex society where so many Jews seem to lose their commitment to Judaism. And they created their institutions and leadership, etc., with that sort of outlook in mind.
That's a great setup to think about. So the sects are about maintaining distance. That's sort of the ultra-Orthodox. The church is more inclusive. It's hierarchical. It's open to other Jews. That's the modern Orthodox. What happens in the 1980s? What is the realignment?
So just one more point about the before we get to that 1980s, which is that we'll use an institution, which today is a very important one, just as a good illustration of the ultimate sort of sectarian outlook. People are very familiar with Hasidism, and you could look to enclaves, let's say, in the Rockland County area, New Square or Kiryas Yoel, as being particularly sectarian types of environments, which are really egalitarian in the way they perceive their population. And therefore, a person like the very well-known author now, Shulam Dean, who had alternative thoughts, eventually was thrown out of New Square. He didn't have a place there. There's an article this week, I believe, in Tablet by him. He's a pretty well-known guy. In any case, the Lakewood Yeshiva, though, or what is officially called Beth Medrash Gavoha, was started in 1943 by Rav Aaron Cutler, a very important yeshiva head who made his way from Eastern Europe, from Poland to the United States, and in 1943 started yeshiva with a few students. Very quickly, he left Westchester because it was too diverse, and he founded his yeshiva in Lakewood, New Jersey, which was like chicken farming country. And he did so because he wanted to create a pure environment. He wanted to create an environment where, in a place where there was no intense and critical mass of Jewish type of Jewish community, not Reform conservative and not even Orthodox. There were some Orthodox Jews there who were supportive, but it was a very small and not significant, insignificant community. And he specifically created that community, which would be far enough away from New York so it wouldn't be polluted, so to speak, but close enough, I suppose, so that his students could go on dates, his students could be within shouting distance of these were for the most part in the New York era. And there are other examples of that. Now, what happened, you ask, in the 1980s? By the 1980s, the sectarians or the Haredim are not so insecure anymore. They are not worried about disappearing after the Holocaust. They just wanted to have a renaissance. They just wanted to replenish themselves. They just wanted to reestablish the yeshivas or the types of yeshivas that they'd had in Europe. They were sort of memorializing their past or even celebrating that past through their very existence. There were always exceptions to the rule. For example, the Lubavitch Hasidic sect, the Chabadnikim, who from the outset believed that they had to engage broader American Judaism, but that was not the case for most of the Haredim. In the 1980s, there's the beginnings of a sense of we're here to stay. We're pretty established. We need to start to expand. And when it comes to the Haredi world, that manifested itself in starting to create sort of outgrowths or emissaries to send people out to other parts of America where there were Orthodox communities, but there weren't really ultra-Orthodox or Haredi communities, and to try to strengthen, so to speak, or to give what they say in Hebrew, chizuk, to strengthen these communities and make them more oriented towards the yeshivish or Hasidish, depending on the group, type of lifestyle. Simultaneously, and it really comes a little bit later, but simultaneously, the modern Orthodox, who really believed very that their way, their synthetic way, was ideal, are starting to become a little bit more insecure about their way as they see a lot of their children going off to college and being very successful professionally and economically, intellectually, etc., but not necessarily reproducing the synthetic lifestyle, the ideal lifestyle that their parents consider to be so fruitful. And you see a process where some of the modern Orthodox start to reevaluate and look to the Haredim and say, "Hey, well, maybe you've got it right." And they start to adopt some of the strict interpretations of the law. They start to think about things like having separate male-female in education, because that seems to be maybe more effective at maintaining. Is there an internet? Is the internet okay? Lou?
Yep, still here.
Okay, I lost.
All right. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna stop for 1 second. Okay, so I think it might be on your end, but maybe can you just go back to simultaneously
right.
And then talk
so
about the modern Orthodox?
The modern
right, so,
Orthodox starts.
Okay,
to,
so give me 1 second.
Less secure.
Hold on.
Are you with me?
Give me 1 second.
Okay, sure.
Okay, the time is 1925. Okay, you ready? Go ahead. Start from simultaneously.
Okay, so the simultaneous with the strengthening or the sense of renewed security or self confidence, or some would even say triumphalism of the Haredi world, the modern Orthodox start to become a little bit less secure. They see their own children who go off to college and
graduate schools or gain tremendous success professionally, economically, socially, intellectually. Nonetheless, many of those same children are not as engaged or not as committed to the synthetic lifestyle of their parents. I think we're having trouble again.
I can hear you.
Hello.
Hold on, I'm gonna.
Okay, so I'm gonna keep going, but it does say internet connection problem here, but I'll just keep going. In any case,
wait, sorry. Hold on 1 second. Sorry.
Another thing that happens. And this is.
Sorry, can you hold on 1 second?
Sure.
Oh, you can? Okay, sure. So give me 1 second. I'll just note the time. Okay, I'm not sure what the issue is, but we'll fix this. All right, the time is 21:02. Okay, sorry. Just take it from simultaneously once more, and then keep going. Okay.
So
all right, here we go.
Simultaneous with the renewed sense of strength and security, and maybe even triumphalism of the Haredi community, the modern Orthodox start to demonstrate signs of being a little bit insecure, a little bit fearful for their own futures, and the sense that they're not succeeding in reproducing the synthetic lifestyle that they thought that they could, that they had idealized. They see their children being very successful intellectually, professionally, culturally, socially, but nonetheless not necessarily wanting to reproduce the same type of lifestyle. And another thing that happens, which is interesting, is that they begin to look to the Haredim and say, wow, they seem to be very successful. Maybe we should be adopting some of their outlook. Another thing that happens is that we have the new trend of kids going to Israel for the year to study in Israeli yeshivot. And there they're exposed to a more holistic type of Jewish education and Jewish religious environment. And some of those people, those kids from modern Orthodox homes, choose to move to Israel because they look at that as an ability to live like a total Jewish life. Others return back to the United States. And when they go to the United States, they look at their modern Orthodox mother institutions, synagogues, rabbis, etc., and they start to question, well, maybe this doesn't really work. And they're more educated. They're more dedicated to Talmud study. They have higher standards of religious observance. And quite a few of the children of committed modern Orthodox families choose to move to a more right-wing or a more Haredi or a more separatist type of lifestyle. So that's something that begins in the 1980s, and it's not something that has ended, but the 1980s is when you see the beginnings of a change in the dynamic where the Haredim seem to be strengthening and expanding, whereas the modern Orthodox seem to be moving more towards insulating themselves, towards protecting themselves from the apparent dangers of society.
So if the Haredi or ultra-Orthodox Jews are more interested in outreach, kiruv, and the modern Orthodox are more interested in inward-looking, does that mean that, you know, the two have sort of switched? You know, what was once a church is now a sect and vice versa? Or is that too simplistic? Is it more of a blurring of lines?
Well, I would never tell anyone that they're being too simplistic, but I think it's a good way to ask the question. I think that, we skipped a step, which is that towards the end of the 1980s, 1990s, that's when we start to see the Haredim not just engaging the modern Orthodox community in a more profound manner, but rather expanding their horizons to the non-Orthodox communities and the non-observant. And we see the proliferation of these cottage sort of communities in places where there were never Haredim before, starting in Atlanta, Georgia, and in Houston, Texas, to Dallas, and moving on to Palo Alto, Kansas City, Columbus, Ohio. Each place has a different trajectory. But if in the 1970s and early 80s, the expansion of the Haredi community was to places like Chicago, Toronto, Detroit, Los Angeles, by the late 1980s, early 1990s, we're looking at a much broader spectrum of communities, and with a focus not so much on engaging the modern Orthodox and strengthening their commitment, but rather engaging with Reform Jews. And here's where this my research sort of began to tell me that what Liebman saw is not the reality today, where you see millions and millions of dollars, huge amounts of manpower and training going into creating Haredi Jews, very in great parallels to the Chabad movement, who their professional trajectory and their whole focus is how to educate, how to come into contact, how to be positive influencers, have a positive influence on the broader American Jewish community, specifically the unaffiliated, which according to the Pew study is the largest expanding group in American Jewry today. So regarding your specific question, so you my book really demonstrates that there is this flip a little bit where the Haredim who were sectarian, who were so insular, have become more open and more willing to come into contact and to develop relationships with the broader Jewish community, whereas the modern Orthodox, who were predicated on this church structure of being inclusive and working in concert. And some of the chapters of my book, for example, talk about the Soviet Jewry movement and how in the Soviet Jewry movement there was so much partnership and non-judgmental partnership between the modern Orthodox and the segments of American Jewry, whereas the Haredim would not in any way, shape, or form participate or cooperate with those types of efforts for a variety of reasons, of course. Here we see sort of an inversion. Nonetheless, and I think you realize that, and this is very important to say, we're not talking about a sort of black and white. We're talking about, and that's why I called my book Beyond Sectarianism, The Realignment of American Orthodox Judaism. I don't think that there's plenty of sectarianism left in American Haredi Jewry. There are plenty of enclaves. There are plenty of places where the type of Judaism that Liebman described in the 60s has only expanded and flourished and people with very little contact with the a broader Jewish community or the outside world. Nonetheless, there is far greater openness to connecting with other Jews. There is much more investment of time, of money, manpower, etc. And as I point out in the book, even if you have, let's say, a Haredi family that has seven children, only one or two of them are in the Outreach Kiruv movement, nonetheless, they will these things trickle down because you go to Houston, Texas for your nephew's bar mitzvah, you attend a wedding, you get the literature, you're in touch. The internet has had a very strong effect. All these different Haredi outlets have websites. They also have to compromise their own halachic standards in order to be willing to be able to engage the greater Jewish public. There are Haredi community kollels that have golf tournaments, that have Super Bowl parties, that have all sorts of events, and they have a lot more mixing of the men and women in order to attract people to their programming. So all sorts of things which were not acceptable in the Haredi community are now acceptable in the name of outreach. Somewhat ironically, the modern Orthodox are actually striving, at least quite a few of them, not all of them. There are certainly modern Orthodox communities that are, as Jay Lefkowitz said 2 years ago in a very profound article, socially Orthodox and really not particularly ideological or fervently observant. But there is a significant mainstream contingent which certainly has a very strong representation in the modern Orthodoxy's banner institution, Yeshiva University, which trains most modern Orthodox rabbis, or certainly did until recently, in which the direction is always towards greater stringency and towards striving towards those ideal types of values and observances which were once associated with the Haredi community. So it is not that they're flipping, it's not that they're exchanging positions, but there is a realignment, and the dichotomy that Liebman developed, while it's very instructive and interesting, it doesn't reflect the realities of American Orthodoxy today. There is a much stronger middle ground. In my book, which I see that you've read, if you look at the last chapter, the concluding chapter, there's really interesting citations that I bring where major representatives of the Haredi community acknowledge that the spectrum of Orthodoxy, as far as they're concerned, is much wider. Where Avi Shafran, the spokesman for the Agudath Israel of America organization, says that as far as he's concerned, the people who are included in the spectrum of Orthodoxy that he recognizes run from the Lithuanian Yeshiva Bachrim from Lakewood to the Hasidish graduates of a Satmar institution to the people associated with the Chabad movement to the graduates of Yeshiva University. And all of them are part of the Orthodox spectrum, which is sort of a middle ground. The group that he leaves out, and maybe you want to talk about that if there's still time, is the what's known as the open Orthodox, which is sort of a backlash to this move to the right among the modern Orthodox, which has been led by Rabbi Avi Weiss and people associated with his Yeshivat Chovevei Torah and Yeshivat Maharat for women. And that more moderate or liberal, I would say liberal is a better word, liberal backlash has caused a coalescence, has been part of what has caused this realignment, or certainly a coalescence of the, I guess, the right wing of the modern Orthodox and the non-radical Haredim, where they find that with this common enemy, so to speak, the open Orthodox, the those two other groups have much more in common. If you want to ask about that, I'd be happy to engage that.
There's so much more I'd like to talk about, but we are out of time. Adam, briefly, what are you working on next?
It's a wonderful question. Thank you for asking. By the way, yes. So I'm working on a few different things. Probably the most relevant to this is that there's been very little work on the relationship between American Orthodox Jews and Israel, in the sense of how American Orthodox Jews influence Israel, not from a political perspective, but more from a cultural, intellectual, educational level. And I believe there's a lot of work to be done there. So that is going to be, I'm actually going to be on sabbatical next year. I'm going to be spending some of my time as a visiting professor in the College of Charleston in South Carolina. And in terms of my research agenda, that will certainly be number one on the agenda, in addition to some other projects that I have going at this moment.
Adam, that sounds like a great project. I want to thank you for being on the show today. The book is Beyond Sectarianism, The Realignment of American Orthodox Judaism, published in 2015 by Wayne State University Press. The author is Adam Furziger. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Very much appreciated.